This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The One by Kira Cass, performed by Amy Rubinade. Chapter 1. This time, we were in the great room, enduring another etiquette lesson, when bricks came flying through the window. Elise immediately hit the ground and started crawling for the side door, whimpering as she went. Celeste let out a high-pitched scream and bolted toward the back of the room, barely escaping a shower of glass. Chris grabbed my arm, pulling me, and I broke into a run alongside her as we made our way to the exit. "Hurry, ladies!" Sylvia cried. Within seconds, the guards had lined up at the windows and were firing, and the bursts of sound echoed in my ears as we fled. Whether they came with guns or stones, anyone showing the smallest level of aggression within sight of the palace would die. There was no more patience left for these attacks. "I hate running in these shoes," Chris muttered, a heap of dress draped over her arm, eyes focused on the end of the hall. "One of us is going to have to get used to it," Celeste said, her breath labored. I rolled my eyes. "If it's me, I'll wear sneakers every day. I'm already over this." "Less talking, more moving," Sylvia yelled. "How do we get downstairs from here?" Elise asked. "What about Maxon?" Chris huffed. Sylvia didn't answer. We followed her through a maze of hallways, looking for a path to the basement, watching as guard after guard ran in the opposite direction. I found myself admiring them, wondering if the courage it took to run toward danger for the sake of other people. The guards passing us were completely indistinguishable from one another, until a set of green eyes locked with mine. Aspen didn't look afraid or even startled. There was a problem, and he was on his way to fix it. That was simply who he was. Our gaze was brief, but it was enough. It was like that with Aspen. In a split second, without a word, I could tell him, "Be careful and stay safe." And saying nothing, he'd answer, "I know. Just take care of yourself." While I could easily be at peace with the things we didn't need to say, I had no such luck with the things we'd said out loud. Our last conversation wasn't exactly a happy one. I had been about to leave the palace, and had asked him to give me some space to get over the selection. And then I'd ended up staying, and had given him no explanation as to why. Maybe his patience with me was falling short, his ability to see only the best in me running dry. Somehow, I would have to fix that. I couldn't see a life for me that didn't include Aspen. Even now, as I hoped Maxon would choose me, a world without Aspen felt unimaginable. "Here it is," Sylvia called, pushing a mysterious panel in a wall. We started down the stairs, Elise and Sylvia heading the charge. "Damn it, Elise, pick up the pace," Celeste yelled. I wanted to be irritated that she said it, but I knew we were all thinking the same thing. As we descended into the darkness, I tried to reconcile myself to the hours that would be wasted, hiding like mice. We continued on, the sound of our escape covering the shouts, until one man's voice rang out right on top of us. "Stop!" he yelled. Chris and I turned together, watching as the uniform became clear. "Wait," she called to the girls below. "It's a guard." We stood on the steps, breathing heavily. He finally reached us, gasping himself.
"Sorry, ladies. The rebels ran as soon as the shots were fired. Weren't in the mood for a fight today, I guess."
Sylvia, running her hands over her clothes to smooth them, spoke for us.
"Has the king deemed it safe? If not, you're putting these girls in a very dangerous position."
"The head of the guard cleared it. I'm sure his majesty—"
"You don't speak for the king. Come on, ladies, keep moving."
"Are you serious?" I asked. "We're going down there for nothing." She fixed me with a stare that might have stopped a rebel in his tracks, and I shut my mouth. Sylvia and I had built a friendship of sorts, as she unknowingly helped me distract myself from Maxon and Aspen with her extra lessons.
After my little stunt on the report a few days ago, it seemed that had dissolved into nothing. Turning to the guard, she continued, "Get an official order from the king and we'll return. Keep walking, ladies." The guard and I shared an exasperated look and parted ways. Sylvia showed absolutely no remorse when, 20 minutes later, a different guard came, telling us we were free to go upstairs. I was so irritated by the whole situation, I didn't wait for Sylvia or the other girls. I climbed the stairs, exiting somewhere on the first floor, and continued to my room with my shoes still hooked on my fingers. My maids were missing, but a small silver platter holding an envelope was waiting on the bed. I recognized May's handwriting instantly and tore open the envelope, devouring her words. "Ames, we're aunts. Astra is perfect. I wish you were here to meet her in person, but we all understand you need to be at the palace right now. Do you think we'll be together for Christmas? Not that far away. I've got to get back to helping Kenna and James. I can't believe how pretty she is. Here's a picture for you. We love you. May." I slipped the glossy photo from behind the note. Everyone was there, except for Coda and me. James, Kenna's husband, was beaming, standing over his wife and daughter with puffy eyes. Kenna sat upright in the bed, holding a tiny pink bundle, looking equal parts thrilled and exhausted. Mom and Dad were glowing with pride, while May's and Jared's enthusiasm jumped from the image. Of course Coda wouldn't have gone. There was nothing for him to gain from being present. But I should have been there. I wasn't, though. I was here. And sometimes I didn't understand why. Maxim was still spending time with Chris, even after all he'd done to get me to stay. The rebels unrelentingly attacked our safety from the outside, and inside, the king's icy words did just as much damage to my confidence. All the while, Aspen orbited me, a secret I had to keep. And the cameras came and went, stealing pieces of our lives to entertain the people. I was being pushed into a corner from every angle, and I was missing out on all the things that had always mattered to me. I choked back angry tears. I was so tired of crying. Instead, I went into planning mode. The only way to set things right was to end the selection. Though I still occasionally questioned my desire to be the princess, there was no doubt in my mind that I wanted to be Maxon's. If that was going to happen, I couldn't sit back and wait for it. Remembering my last conversation with the king, I paced as I waited for my maids. I could hardly breathe, so I knew eating would be a waste, but it would be worth the sacrifice. I needed to make some progress, and I needed to do it fast. According to the king, the other girls were making advances toward Maxon, physical advances, and he'd said I was far too plain to have a chance of matching them in that department. As if my relationship with Maxon wasn't complicated enough, there was a whole new issue of rebuilding trust, and I wasn't sure if that meant I wasn't supposed to ask questions or not. While I felt pretty sure he hadn't gone that far physically with the other girls, I couldn't help but wonder. I'd never tried to be seductive before. Pretty much every intimate moment I'd had with Maxon came about without intention. But I had to hope that if I was deliberate, I could make it clear that I was just as interested in him as the others. I took a deep breath, raised my chin, and walked into the dining hall. I was purposely a minute or two late, hoping everyone would already be seated. I was right on that count, but the reaction was better than I'd hoped. I curtsied, swinging my leg around so the slit in the dress fell open, leading nearly all the way up my thigh. The dress was a deep red, strapless and practically backless, and I was almost positive my maids had used magic to make it stay up at all. I rose, locking eyes with Maxon, who I noticed had stopped chewing. Someone dropped a fork. Lowering my gaze, I walked to my seat, settling in next to Chris. "Seriously, America," she whispered. I tilted my head in her direction. "I'm sorry?" I replied, feigning confusion. She put her silverware down and we stared at each other. "You look trashy." "Well, you look jealous." I'd hit pretty close to the mark, because she flushed a bit before returning to her food.
I took limited bites of my own, already miserably constricted. As dessert was being set in front of me, I chose to stop ignoring Maxon, and as I had hoped, his eyes were on me. He reached up and grabbed his ear immediately, and I demurely did the same. My gaze flickered quickly toward King Clarkson, and I tried not to smile. He was irritated, another trick I'd managed to get away with. I excused myself first, giving Maxon a chance to admire the back of the dress, and scurried to my room. I closed the door to my room behind me and unzipped the gown immediately, desperate for a breath.
"How'd it go?"
Mary asked, rushing over. "He seemed stunned. They all did." Lucy squealed and Anne came to help Mary.
"We'll hold it up, just walk," she ordered.
I did as I was told.
"Is he coming tonight?"
"Yes, I'm not sure when, but he'll definitely be here." I perched on the edge of my bed, arms folded around my stomach to keep the open dress from falling down. Anne gave me a sad face.
"I'm sorry you'll have to be uncomfortable for a few more hours. I'm sure it'll be worth it, though."
I smiled, trying to look like I was fine dealing with the pain. I'd told my maids I wanted to get Maxon's attention. I'd left out my hope that, with any luck, this dress would be on the floor pretty soon.
"Do you want us to stay until he arrives?" Lucy asked, her enthusiasm bubbling over.
"No, just help me zip this thing back up. I need to think some things through," I answered, standing so they could help me. Mary took hold of the zipper.
"Suck it in, miss."
I obeyed, and as the dress cinched me in again, I thought of a soldier going to war. Different armor, but the same idea. Tonight, I was taking down a man. Chapter 2. I opened the balcony doors, letting the air sweeten my room. Even though it was December, the breeze was light and tickled my skin. We weren't allowed to go outside at all anymore, not without guards by our sides, so this would have to do. I scurried around the room, lighting candles, trying to make the space inviting. The knock came at the door, and I blew out the match, bolted over to the bed, picked up a book, and fanned out my dress.
"Why, yes, Maxon, this is how I always look when I read."
"Come in," I offered, barely loud enough to be heard. Maxon entered, and I lifted my head delicately, catching the wonder in his eyes as he surveyed my dimly lit room. Finally, he focused on me, his gaze traveling up my exposed leg.
"There you are," I said, closing the book and standing to greet him.
He shut the door and came in, his eyes locked on my curves.
"I wanted to tell you that you look fantastic tonight."
I flicked my hair over my shoulder.
"Oh, this thing? It was just sitting in the back of the closet."
"I'm glad you pulled it out."
I laced my fingers through his.
"Come sit with me. I haven't seen you much lately."
He sighed and followed.
"I'm sorry about that. Things have been a bit tense since we lost so many people in that rebel attack. And you know how my father is. We sent several guards to protect your families, and our forces are stretched thin, so he's worse than usual. And he's pressuring me to end the selection. But I'm holding my ground. I want to have some time to think this through."
We sat on the edge of the bed, and I settled close to him.
"Of course. You should be in charge of this."
He nodded.
"Exactly. I know I've said it 1,000 times, but when people push me, it makes me crazy."
I gave him a little pout.
"I know."
He paused, and I couldn't read his face. I was trying to figure out how to move this forward without being pushy, but I wasn't sure how to manufacture a romantic moment.
"I know this is silly, but my maids put this new perfume on me today. Is it too strong?"
I asked, tilting my neck so he could lean in and breathe. He came near, his nose hitting a soft patch of skin.
"No, dear, it's lovely,"
he said into the curve that led to my shoulder. Then he kissed me there. I swallowed, trying to focus. I needed to have some level of control.
"I'm glad you like it. I've really missed you."
I felt his hand snake around my back, and I brought my face down. There he was, eyes looking into mine, our lips millimeters apart.
"How much have you missed me?"
he breathed. His stare, combined with his voice being so low, was doing funny things to my heartbeat. "So much," I whispered back. "So, so much." I leaned forward, aching to be kissed. Maxon was confident, pulling me closer with one hand and stringing the other through my hair. My body wanted to melt into the kiss, but the dress stopped me. Then, suddenly nervous again, I remembered my plan. Sliding my hands down Maxon's arms, I guided his fingers to the zipper on the back of my dress, hoping that would be enough. His hands lingered there for a moment, and I was seconds away from just asking him to unzip it when he burst out laughing. The sound sobered me up pretty quickly. "What's so funny?" I asked, horrified, trying to think of an inconspicuous way to check my breath.
"Of everything you've done, this is by far the most entertaining."
Maxon bent over, hitting his knee as he laughed. "Excuse me?" He kissed me hard on my forehead.
"I always wondered what it would be like to see you try."
He started laughing again.
"I'm sorry, I have to go."
Even the way he stood held a sense of amusement.
"I'll see you in the morning."
And then he left. He just left. I sat there completely mortified. Why in the world did I think I could pull that off? Maxon may not know everything about me, but at the very least he knew my character. And this? It wasn't me. I looked down at the ridiculous dress. It was way too much. Even Celeste wouldn't have gone this far. My hair was too perfect, my makeup too heavy. He knew what I was trying to do from the second he walked through the doorway. Sighing, I went around the room, blowing out candles, and wondering how I was supposed to face him tomorrow. Chapter 3. I debated claiming the stomach flu, or an incapacitating headache, panic attack, really anything to get out of going to breakfast. Then I thought of Maxon, and how he always talked about putting on a brave face. That wasn't a particular strength of mine. But if I went downstairs at least, if I could just be present, maybe he'd give me some credit. In hopes that I could erase some of what I'd done, I asked my maids to put me in the most demure dress I had. Based on that request alone, they knew not to ask about the night before. The neckline was a bit higher than the ones we typically wore in the warm Angeles weather, and it had sleeves that went nearly to my elbows. It was flowery and cheerful, the opposite of last night's get-up. I could barely look at Maxon when I entered the dining hall, but I walked tall at least. When I finally peeked at him, he was watching me, grinning. As he chewed his food, he winked at me, and I ducked my head again, pretending to be very interested in my quiche. "Glad to see you in actual clothes today," Chris spat. "Glad to see you in such a good mood." "What in the world has gotten into you?" she hissed. Dejected, I gave up. "I'm not up for this today, Chris. Just leave me alone." For a moment, she looked as if she might fight back, but I guessed I wasn't worth it. She sat up a little straighter and continued eating. If I'd had any level of success last night, then I could justify my actions. As it was, I couldn't even fake being proud. I risked another glance at Maxon, and even though he wasn't watching me, he was still suppressing a smug expression as he cut his food. That was it. I wasn't going to suffer through a day like this. I was about to swoon or clutch my stomach or do anything to get me out of the room when a butler came in. He carried an envelope on a silver platter, and he bowed before placing it in front of King Clarkson. The king took the letter and read it quickly.
"Damn French," he muttered. "Sorry, Amberly, it looks like I'll be leaving within the hour."
"Another problem with the trade agreement?" she asked quietly.
"Yes, I thought we'd settled all this months ago. We need to be firm on this one."
He stood, throwing his napkin on his plate, and made his way to the door.
"Father,"
Maxon called, standing,
"don't you want me to come?"
It had struck me as odd that the king didn't bark out a command for his son to follow when he exited, seeing as that was his usual method of instructing. Instead, he turned to Maxon, his eyes cold and his voice sharp.
"When you're ready to behave the way a king should, you'll get to experience what a king does."
Without saying anything more, he left us.
Maxon stood for a moment, shocked and embarrassed by his father's choice to call him out in front of everyone. As he sat down, he turned to his mother.
"Wasn't really looking forward to that flight, if I'm being honest,"
he said, joking away the tension. The queen smiled, as of course she must, and the rest of us ignored it. The other girls finished their breakfasts and excused themselves to the women's room. When it was just Maxon, Elise, and me remaining at our tables, I looked up at him. We both tugged our ears at the same time, then smiled. Elise finally laughed, and we met in the middle of the room, not bothered by the maids and butlers cleaning up around us. "It's my fault he's not taking you," I lamented.
"Perhaps," he teased. "Trust me, this isn't the first time he's tried to put me in my place, and he has a million reasons in his head why he thinks he should. It wouldn't surprise me if his only motive this time was spite. He doesn't want to lose control, and the closer I am to picking a wife, the more of a likelihood that is for him, though we both know he'll never truly let go."
"He might as well just send me home. He's never going to let you pick me." I still hadn't told Maxon about how his father had cornered me, threatening me in the middle of the hall after Maxon talked him into letting me stay. King Clarkson had made it clear I was to keep my mouth shut about our conversation, and I didn't want to cross him. At the same time, I hated keeping it from Maxon. "Besides," I added, crossing my arms, "after last night, I can't imagine you're that keen on keeping me anyway." He bit his lip.
"I'm sorry I laughed, but really, what else could I do?"
"I had plenty of ideas," I muttered, still embarrassed at my attempt to seduce him. "I feel so stupid." I buried my head in my hands.
"Stop," he said gently, pulling me in for an embrace. "Trust me when I say it was very tempting, but you're not that girl."
"But shouldn't I be? Shouldn't that be part of what we are?" I whined into his chest.
"Don't you remember the night in the safe room?" he said, his voice low.
"Yes, but that was basically us saying goodbye."
"It would have been a fantastic goodbye."
I stepped away and swatted at him. He laughed, happy to have broken through the uneasiness. "Let's forget about it," I proposed.
"Very well," he agreed. "Besides, we have a project to work on, you and I."
"We do?"
"Yes, and since my father is gone, this will be a convenient time to start brainstorming."
"All right," I said, excited to be a part of something that was just between the two of us. He sighed, making me nervous about what he was planning.
"You're right. Father doesn't approve of you. But he might be forced to bend if we can manage one thing."
"Which is?"
"We have to make you the people's favorite."
I rolled my eyes. "That is what we're working on? Maxon, that's never going to happen. I saw a poll in one of Celeste's magazines after I tried to save Marley. People can hardly stand me."
"Opinions change. Don't let that one moment bring you down too much."
I still felt hopeless, but what could I say? If this was my only option, I had to at least try. "Fine," I said, "but I'm telling you, this won't work." With an impish grin on his face, he came very close and gave me a long, slow kiss.
"And I'm telling you, it will."
Chapter 4. I walked into the women's room, thoughts focused on Maxon's new plan. The queen hadn't shown up yet, and the girls were all laughing in a clump by the windows.
"America, come here," Chris said urgently.
Even Celeste turned back, smiling, waving me over. I was a little uneasy about what could be waiting for me, but I walked to the huddle anyway.
"Oh my goodness," I squealed.
"I know," Celeste sighed. There, running laps in the garden without their shirts on, were half of the guards in the palace. Aspen had told me that all guards got injections to help keep them strong, but apparently they also did a lot of work to keep their bodies in peak condition. While we were all devoted to Maxon, the sight of cute boys was something we couldn't ignore.
"The guy with blonde hair," Chris said. "Well, I think he's a blonde. Their hair is so short."
"I like this one,"
Elise said quietly, as another guard ran past our window. Chris giggled. I can't believe we're doing this. Oh, that guy right there with the green eyes, Celeste said, pointing to Aspen. Chris sighed. I danced with him at Halloween, and he's as funny as he is good-looking. I danced with him, too, Celeste bragged, easily the most gorgeous guard in the palace. I had to laugh a little. I wondered how she would feel if she knew he used to be a six. I watched him run and thought about the hundreds of times those arms had embraced me. The distance growing between Aspen and me felt unavoidable, but even now I had to wonder if there was a way to keep some piece of what we had. What if I needed him? What about you, America? Chris asked. The only one who really caught my eye was Aspen, and after feeling that ache for him, this felt kind of stupid. I dodged the question. I don't know, they're all kind of nice. Kind of nice? Celeste echoed. You have to be kidding. These are some of the best-looking guys I've ever seen. It's only a bunch of boys without their shirts on, I countered. Yeah, why don't you enjoy it for a minute, before it's just the three of us you have to look at, she said snippily. Whatever. Maxon looks just as good without his shirt on as any of those guys. What? Chris shrieked. A second after the words slipped out of my mouth, I realized what I'd said. Three sets of eyes focused in on me. When were you and Maxon topless, exactly? Celeste demanded. I wasn't. But he was? Chris asked. Was that what that god-awful dress was about yesterday? Celeste gasped. You slut! Excuse me? I yelled. Well, what else would you expect? She snapped, crossing her arms. Unless you want to tell us all what happened and why we're so wrong. But there was no way to explain this. Undressing Maxon hadn't exactly been a romantic moment, but I couldn't tell them I'd been tending to wounds on his back, specifically delivered by his father. He'd spent his life guarding that secret. If I betrayed him now, it would be the end of us. Celeste was half-naked up against him in a hallway, I accused, pointing a finger at her. Her mouth popped open. How did you know? Has everyone been getting naked with Maxon? Elise asked, horrified. We weren't naked, I shouted. Okay, Chris said, putting out her arms. We need to clear this up. Who has done what with Maxon? Everyone was quiet for a moment, not wanting to speak up first. I've kissed him, Elise said. Three times, but that's it. I haven't kissed him at all, Chris confessed, but that's by my own choosing. He would kiss me if I'd let him. Really? Not once? Celeste asked, shocked. Not once. Well, I have kissed him plenty. Celeste flipped her hair, deciding to be proud instead of embarrassed. The best was in the hallway one night. She eyed me. We kept whispering about how exciting it was that we might get caught. Finally, all eyes were on me. I thought of the king's words, suggesting that maybe the other girls were being much more promiscuous than I was prepared to be. But now I knew it was one more weapon in his arsenal, a way to make me feel insignificant. I came clean. I was Maxon's first kiss, not Olivia. I didn't want anyone to know. And we've had a few more intimate moments, and one of those times Maxon's shirt came off. Came off? Like it magically flew over his head? Celeste pressed. He took it off, I admitted. Not satisfied, Celeste pushed on. He took it off, or you took it off? I guess we both did. After a charged moment, Chris started again. Okay, so now we all know where we stand. And where is that? Elise asked. No one answered. I just want to say, I started, all of those moments were really important to me, and I care about Maxon. Are you implying that we don't? Celeste barked. I know that you don't. How dare you? Celeste, it's no secret that you want someone with power. I'm willing to bet you like Maxon well enough, but you're not in love with him. You're shooting for the crown.
Without denying it, she turned on Elise. What about this one? I've never seen a speck of emotion out of you.
I'm reserved. You should try it sometime, Elise fired back quickly. Seeing a spark of anger in Elise made me like her more. In my family, all the marriages are arranged. I knew what was coming for me, and that's all this is. I may not be head over heels for Maxon, but I respect him. Love can come later.
Sympathetically, Chris spoke. That actually sounds kind of sad, Elise.
It's not. There are bigger things than love.
We stared at Elise, her words echoing. I fought for my family out of love, and for Aspen, too. And now, though it scared me to think it, I was sure that all my actions where Maxon was concerned, even when they were hopelessly stupid, were driven by that feeling. Still, what if there was something more important here than that?
Well, I'll say it. I love him, Chris blurted. I love him, and I want him to marry me.
Snapped back into the discussion at hand, I ached to melt into the carpet. What had I started?
All right, America, fess up, Celeste demanded.
I froze, breathing shallowly. It took me a moment to find the right words.
Maxon knows how I feel, and that's all that matters.
She rolled her eyes at my answer, but didn't press any further. No doubt she was worried I would do the same to her if she did. We stood there, looking at one another. The selection had been going on for months, and now we could finally see the real lines of competition. We'd all gotten a peek into everyone else's relationship with Maxon, at least one aspect of it, and could look at them side by side. Moments later, the Queen walked in, wishing us a good morning. After curtsying to her, we all retreated, into corners, into ourselves. Maybe it was always supposed to come to this. There were four girls and one prince, and three of us would be leaving soon, with little more than an interesting story of how we spent our fall. Chapter 5. I was wringing my hands as I paced the downstairs library, trying to put the words together in my head. I knew I needed to explain what had just happened to Maxon before he heard about it from the other girls, but that didn't mean I was looking forward to the conversation.
Knock, knock,
he said, coming in. He took in my worried expression.
What's wrong?
Don't get mad, I warned as he approached. His pace slowed and the concerned look on his face became guarded instead.
I'll try.
The girls know I saw you without your shirt on.
I saw the question coming to his lips.
I didn't say anything about your back, I vowed. I wanted to, because now they just think we were in the middle of some big make-out fest.
He smiled.
It did end up that way.
Don't joke, Maxon. They hate me right now.
The light didn't leave his eyes as he hugged me.
If it's any consolation, I'm not mad. So long as you kept my secret, I don't mind. Though I am a little shocked you told them. How did it even come up?
I buried my head in his chest. I don't think I can tell you. His thumb rubbed up and down my back.
I thought we were supposed to be working on our trust.
We are. I'm asking you to trust that this will only get worse if I tell you.
Maybe I was wrong, but I was pretty sure confessing to Maxon that we were checking out half-dressed, sweaty guards would get us all into some kind of trouble.
Okay,
he finally said.
The girls know you've seen me partly undressed. Anything else?
I hesitated. They know I was your first kiss, and I know everything you have and haven't done with them. He pulled back.
What?
After I let the whole shirtless thing slip, there was a lot of finger-pointing and everyone came clean. I know you've spent plenty of time kissing Celeste, and that you would have kissed Chris long before now if she would have let you. It all came out. He wiped his hand over his face, taking a few paces as he processed this.
So I have absolutely no privacy anymore? None? Because the four of you had to check scores with each other?
His frustration was clear.
You know, for someone concerned with honesty, you ought to be grateful.
He stopped and stared.
I beg your pardon?
Everything is out in the open now. We all have a pretty good idea of where we stand, and I, for one, am thankful.
He rolled his eyes.
Thankful?
If you had told me that Celeste and I were at about the same point with you physically, I would never have tried to come on to you like I did last night. Do you know how humiliated I was?
He scoffed and started pacing again.
Please, America, you've said and done so many foolish things. I'm surprised you can even be embarrassed anymore.
Maybe it was because I had been raised with less of an articulate education, but it took a second for the full impact of his words to hit me. Maxon had always liked me, or so he'd said. I knew it was against the better judgment of other people. Was it also against his?
I'll go then, I said quietly, unable to look him in the eye. Sorry I let the whole shirt thing out.
I started walking away, feeling so small I wondered if he even noticed.
Come on, America, I didn't mean it like...
No, it's fine, I mumbled. I'll watch my words better. I made my way upstairs, unsure of whether I wanted Maxon to come after me or not. He didn't. When I got to my room, Anne, Mary, and Lucy were in there, changing my sheets and dusting the shelves.
Hello, my lady, Anne greeted. Would you like some tea?
No, I'm just going to sit on the balcony for a moment. If any visitors come, tell them I'm resting.
Anne frowned a bit but nodded.
Of course.
I spent some time taking in the fresh air, then went over the assigned reading Sylvia had prepared for us. I took a short nap and played my violin for a little while. So long as I could avoid the other girls and Maxon, I really didn't care what I was doing. With the king away, we were allowed to take our meals in our rooms, so I did. Halfway through my lemon and pepper chicken, a knock came at the door. Maybe I was being paranoid, but I was sure it was Maxon. There was no way I could see him right now. I grabbed Mary and Anne and headed to the bathroom.
Lucy, I whispered, tell him I'm taking a bath.
Him? A bath?
Yes, don't let him in, I instructed.
What's all this about? Anne asked as I closed the door, pressing my ear up against it.
Can you hear anything? I asked.
They both put their ears to the door, too, waiting to see if something intelligible came through. I heard Lucy's muffled voice, but then I put my ear to the crack of the door, and the following conversation was much clearer.
She's in the bath, Your Majesty, Lucy answered calmly.
It was Maxon.
Oh, I was hoping she'd be eating still. I thought maybe I could have my dinner with her.
She decided to take a bath before she ate.
There was a tiny waver in her voice, uncomfortable with being dishonest.
Come on, Lucy, hold it together.
I see. Well, maybe you could have her send for me when she's done. I'd like to speak with her.
It might be a very long bath, Your Majesty.
Maxon paused.
Oh, very well. Then could you please let her know I came by and tell her to send for me if she'd like to talk? Tell her not to worry about the hour. I'll come.
Yes, sir.
It was quiet for a long time, and I was starting to think he had left.
Thank you, he said finally. Good night.
Good night, Your Majesty.
I hid for a few seconds longer to make sure he was gone. When I came out, Lucy was still standing by the door. I looked at all my maids, seeing the questions in their eyes.
I just want to be alone tonight, I said vaguely. In fact, I think I'm ready to wind down. If you could take my dinner tray, I'm going to get ready for bed.
Do you want one of us to stay? Mary asked, in case you decide to send for the prince. I could see the hope in their eyes, but I had to let them down.
No, I just need some rest. I'll see Maxon in the morning.
It was strange tucking myself into bed, knowing something was hanging between Maxon and me, but I didn't know how to talk to him right now. It didn't make sense. We'd already been through so many ups and downs together, so many attempts to make this relationship real. But it was clear that if that was going to happen, we still had a very long way to go. I was gruffly awoken before dawn. The light from the hallway flooded my room, and I rubbed my eyes as a guard entered.
Lady America, wake up, please, he said.
What's wrong? I asked, yawning.
There's an emergency. We need you downstairs.
At once, my blood turned cold. My family was dead. I knew it. We'd sent guards. We'd warned those at home this was possible, but the rebels were too much. The same thing had happened to Natalie. She left the Selection an only child after the rebels killed her little sister. None of our families was safe anymore. I threw off the covers and grabbed my robe and slippers. I ran down the hall and stairs as quickly as I could, nearly slipping twice on the steps. When I got to the first floor, Maxim was there, talking intently to a guard. I ran up to him, forgetting about everything from the last 2 days. "Are they all right?" I asked, trying not to cry. "How bad is it?"
"What?"
he asked, taking me in for an unexpected hug. "My parents, my brothers and sisters, are they okay?" Quickly, Maxon held me at arm's length and looked me in the eye.
"They're fine, America. I'm sorry, I should have realized that's what you would have thought of first."
I nearly started weeping, I was so relieved. Maxon seemed a bit confused as he continued.
"There are rebels in the palace."
"What?" I shrieked. "Why aren't we hiding?"
"They're not here to attack."
"Then why are they here?" He sighed.
"It's only 2 rebels from the northern camp. They're unarmed, and they're specifically asking to speak to me. And to you."
"Why me?"
"I'm not sure, but I'm going to talk to them, so I thought I would give you the chance to speak to them as well."
I looked down at myself and ran my hand over my hair. "I'm in my nightgown." He smiled.
"I know, but this is very informal. It's fine."
"Do you want me to talk to them?"
"That is truly up to you. But I'm curious as to why they want to speak with you in particular. I'm not sure they'll tell me if you're not there."
I nodded, weighing this in my head. I wasn't sure I wanted to talk to rebels. Unarmed or not, they were probably far deadlier than I could ever be. But if Maxon thought I could do it, maybe I should. "Okay," I said, pulling myself up. "Okay."
"You won't get hurt, America. I promise."
His hand was still on mine, and he gave my fingers a tiny squeeze. He turned to the guard.
"Lead the way. Keep your holster unlocked, just in case." "Of course, Your Majesty,"
he answered, and escorted us around the corner into the great room, where 2 people were standing, surrounded by more guards. It took me seconds to find Aspen in the crowd.
"Could you call off your dogs?"
one of the rebels asked. He was tall and slim and blonde. His boots were covered in mud, and his outfit looked like something a 7 might wear. A pair of heavy pants taken in to fit him closely, and a patched-up shirt beneath a beaten leather jacket. A rusting compass on a long chain swung around his neck, moving as he shifted. He looked rugged without being terrifying, which wasn't what I'd expected. Even more unexpected was that his companion was a girl. She too wore boots, but as if she was trying to be resourceful and fashionable at the same time, she had on leggings and a skirt constructed from the same material as the male's pants. Her hip jutted out confidently to the side, despite her being surrounded by guards. Even if I hadn't recognized her face, I would have remembered her jacket, denim and cropped, covered with what looked like dozens of embroidered flowers. Making sure I remembered who she was, she gave me a little curtsy. I made a sound that was somewhere between a laugh and a gasp.
"What's wrong?"
Maxon asked. "Later," I whispered. Confused but calm, he gave me a comforting squeeze and focused again on our guests.
"We've come to speak to you in peace," the man said. "We are unarmed, and your guards have searched us. I know asking for privacy would be inappropriate, but we have things to discuss with you that no one else should hear." "What about America?"
Maxon asked.
"We want to speak with her as well."
"To what end?"
"Again," the young man said almost cockily, "we need to be out of earshot of these guys."
He playfully gestured around the room.
"If you think you can harm her. I know you're skeptical of us, and for good reason. But we have no cause to hurt either of you. We want to talk."
Maxon deliberated for a minute.
"You," he said, looking toward one of the guards. "Pull down one of the tables and 4 chairs. Then all of you, please stay back to give our guests some room."
The guards obeyed, and we were all silent for a few uncomfortable minutes. When the table was finally down from the stack, and in the corner with two chairs on either side, Maxon gestured that the pair should join us over there. As we walked, the guards stepped back, wordlessly forming a perimeter around the room and focusing their eyes on the two rebels, as if they were prepared to fire at a second's notice. As we reached the table, the male stuck out his hand.
"Don't you think introductions are in order?"
Maxon eyed him warily, but then relented.
"Maxon Shreve, your sovereign."
The young man chuckled.
"Honored, sir. And you are?" "Mr. August Ilya, at your service."
Chapter 6. Maxon and I looked at each other, then back to the rebels.
"You heard me right. I'm an Ilya, and by birth, too. This one will be by marriage sooner or later,"
August said, nodding to the girl. "Georgia Whitaker," she said. "And of course we know all about you, America." She gave me another smile, and I returned it. I wasn't sure I trusted her, but I certainly didn't hate her.
"So, father was right,"
Maxon sighed. I looked over to him, confused. Maxon knew there were direct descendants of Gregory Ilya walking around?
"He said you'd come for the crown one day." "I don't want your crown,"
August assured us.
"Good, because I intend to lead this country,"
Maxon shot back.
"I've been raised for it, and if you think you can come in here claiming to be Gregory's great-great-grandson..." "I don't want your crown, Maxon. Destroying the monarchy is more up the southern rebels' alley. We have other goals."
August sat at the table, leaning back in his seat. Then, as if it was his home we'd stepped into, he swept his arm across the chairs, inviting us to sit. Maxon and I eyed each other again and joined him, Georgia following quickly. August looked at us a while, either studying us or trying to decide where to start. Maxon, perhaps reminding us who was in charge, broke the tension.
"Would you like some tea or coffee?"
Georgia lit up. "Coffee?" In spite of himself, Maxon smiled at her enthusiasm and turned behind him to get a guard's attention.
"Could you have one of the maids bring some coffee, please? For goodness sake, make sure it's strong."
Then he focused again on August.
"I can't begin to imagine what you want from me. It seems you made a point to come while the palace was asleep, and I'm guessing you'd like to keep this visit as secretive as possible. Say what you must. I can't promise to give you what you want, but I will listen."
August nodded and leaned forward.
"We've been looking for Gregory's diaries for decades. We knew they existed long ago, and had a recent confirmation from a source I cannot reveal."
August looked at me.
"It wasn't your presentation on the report that gave it away, just so you know."
I sighed in relief. The second he mentioned the diaries, I began silently cursing myself and bracing for later when Maxon would add this to the list of stupid things I'd done.
"We've never desired to take down the monarchy,"
he said to Maxon.
"Even though it came about in a very corrupt way, we have no problem with having a sovereign leader, particularly if that leader is you."
Maxon was still, but I could sense his pride.
"Thank you. What we would like are other things, specific freedoms. We want nominated officials, and we want to end the castes."
August said all this as if it was easy. If he'd seen my presentation get cut off on the report, he ought to know better.
"You act like I'm already the king,"
Maxon answered in frustration.
"Even if it was possible, I can't simply give you what you're asking for. But you're open to the idea?"
Maxon raised his hands and dropped them to the table.
"What I'm open to is irrelevant at the moment. I am not king."
August sighed, looking over to Georgia. They seemed to communicate wordlessly, and I was impressed at their easy intimacy. Here they were in a very tense situation, one they'd entered maybe suspecting they wouldn't be able to get out of, and their feelings for each other were so close to the surface.
"Speaking of kings," Maxon added, "why don't you explain to America who you are? I'm sure you'd do a better job than I would."
I knew this was a way for Maxon to stall, to think of a way to get control of this situation, but I didn't mind. I was dying to understand. August smiled humorlessly.
That is an interesting story,
he promised, the vibrancy in his voice hinting at how exciting his tale would be.
As you know, Gregory had 3 children, Catherine, Spencer, and Damon. Catherine was married off to a prince, Spencer died, and Damon was the one who inherited the throne. Then when Damon's son Justin died, his cousin Porter Shreve became prince, marrying Justin's young widow, who had won this election barely 3 years earlier. And now the Shreves are the royal family. No more Ilias ought to exist. But we do.
We? Maxon asked, his tone calculated, like he was hoping for numbers. August only nodded. The click of heels announced that the maid was coming. Maxon put a finger to his lips, like August would dare to say more with her in hearing distance. The maid set down the tray and poured coffee for all of us. George's hands were on her cup immediately, waiting for it to be filled. I didn't really care for coffee. It was too bitter for my tastes. But I knew it would help me wake up, so I braced myself to take a drink. Before I could even sip, Maxon slid the bowl of sugar in front of me, like he knew.
You were saying?
Maxon prompted, taking his coffee black.
Spencer didn't die,
August said flatly.
He knew what his father had done to take over the country. He knew his older sister had basically been sold into marriage, and he knew the same was expected of him. He couldn't do it, so he ran.
Where did he go? I asked, speaking for the first time.
He hid with relatives and friends, eventually making a camp with some like-minded people in the north. It's colder up there, wetter, and so hard to navigate that no one tries. We live there quietly most of the time.
Georgia nudged him, her face a little shocked. August came to his senses.
I suppose I've now given you directions to invade us yourself. I want to remind you that we've never killed any of your officers or staff, and we avoid injuring them at all costs. All we ever wanted was to put an end to the castes. To do that, we needed proof that Gregory was the man we'd always been told he was. We have that now. And America hinted at it enough that we feel we could exploit that if we wanted to. We really don't, though. Not if we don't have to.
Maxon took a deep swig and set down his cup.
I'm honestly not sure what I'm supposed to do with this information. You're a direct descendant of Gregory Ilya, but you don't want the crown. You've come looking for things only the king could provide, but you asked for an audience with me and one of the elite. My father isn't even here. We know,
August said.
This was deliberate timing.
Maxon huffed.
If you don't want the crown and only want things I can't give you, why are you here?
August and Georgia looked at each other, perhaps preparing themselves for their biggest request yet.
We came to ask you for these things because we know you're a reasonable man. We've watched you all your life, and we can see it in your eyes. I can see it now.
I tried to be inconspicuous as I studied Maxon's reaction to these words.
You don't like the castes either. You don't like the way your father holds the country under his thumb. You don't want to fight wars you know are nothing more than a distraction. More than anything, you want peace during your lifetime. We're guessing that once you're king, things could really change. And we've been waiting a long time for that. We're prepared to wait longer. The Northern Rebels are willing to give you our word never to attack the palace again, and to do our best to stop or slow the Southern Rebels. We see so much that you can't from behind these walls. We would swear our allegiance to you without question if you would be willing to give us a sign of your readiness to work with us toward a future that would finally give the people of Ilya a chance to live their own lives.
Maxon didn't seem to know what to say, so I spoke up. What do the Southern Rebels want, anyway? Just to kill us all? August moved his head in a motion that was neither a shake nor a nod.
That's part of it, sure, but only so they'll have no one to combat them. Too much of the population is oppressed, and this growing cell has bought into the idea that they could rule the country themselves. America, you're a 5. I know you've seen your share of people who hate the monarchy.
Maxon discreetly moved his eyes my way. I gave a brief nod.
Of course you have, because when you're on the bottom, your only choice is to blame the top. In this case, they've got good reason. After all, it was a 1 who sentenced them to their lives with no real hope for bettering them.
Those in charge of the Southern Rebels have convinced their disciples that the way to get back what they think is theirs is to take it from the monarchy. But I've had people defect from the Southerner rebel leadership and end up with me. I know for a fact that once the Southerners get control, they have no intention of sharing the wealth. When in history has that ever happened? Their plan is to obliterate what Ilia has, take over, make a bunch of promises, and leave everyone in the same place they are now. For most people, I'm sure it'll get worse. The Sixes and Sevens won't move up, except for a select few the Rebels will manipulate for the sake of the show. Twos and Threes will have everything stripped from them. It'll make a bunch of people feel vindicated, but it won't fix anything. If there are no pop stars churning out those mind-numbing songs, then there are no musicians in the booths backing them up. No clerks running back and forth with tapes, no shop owners selling the music. Taking out one person at the top destroys thousands at the bottom.
August paused for a moment, looking consumed with worry.
It'll be Gregory all over again, only worse. The Southerners are prepared to be far more cutthroat than you could ever be, and the chances of the country bouncing back are slim. It'll be the same old oppression under a brand new name, and your people will suffer like never before.
He looked into Maxon's eyes. They seemed to have some understanding between them, something that maybe came from being born to lead.
All we need is a sign, and we'll do everything we can to help you change things, peacefully and fairly. Your people deserve a chance.
Maxon looked at the table. I couldn't imagine the debate in his head.
What kind of sign?
He asked hesitantly.
Money? No,
August said, nearly laughing.
We have more funds than you might guess. How is that possible? Donations,
he replied simply. Maxon nodded, but I was surprised. Donations meant there were people who knew how many supporting them. How big was the Northern Rebel force when those supporters were taken into account? How much of the country was asking for exactly what these two had come here requesting?
If not money, Maxon said finally, what do you want?
August flicked his head toward me.
Pick her.
I buried my face in my hands, knowing how Maxon would take this. There was a long moment of silence before he lost his temper.
I will not have anyone else telling me who I can and cannot marry. This is my life you're playing games with.
I looked up in time to see August stand across the table.
And the palace has been playing with other people's lives for years. Grow up, Maxon. You're the prince. You want your damn crown, then keep it. But responsibilities come with that privilege.
Guards were cautiously walking our way, alerted by Maxon's tone and August's aggressive stance. Certainly they could hear everything by now. Maxon stood to counter him.
You don't get to choose my wife. End of story.
August, completely undeterred, stepped back and crossed his arms.
Fine. We have another option if this one doesn't work. Who?
August rolled his eyes.
As if I would tell you, given how calmly you reacted the first time. Come off it. This one or that one doesn't really matter. We just need to know you'll have a partner who will be on the same page for this plan.
My name is America, I said fiercely, standing and looking him straight in the eye. Not this one. I'm not some toy in your little revolution. You keep talking about everyone in Ilia having a chance at the life they want. What about me? What about my future? Do I not count in that plan? I searched their faces, waiting for an answer. They were silent. I noticed the guards surrounding us on edge. I lowered my voice. I'm all for killing off the castes, but I'm not something to be played with. If you're looking for a pawn, there's one girl upstairs so in love with him she'd do anything you asked if it meant a proposal at the end of the day. And the other two? Between duty and prestige, they'd be game too. Go get one of them. Without waiting to be excused, I turned to leave, storming away as best I could in a robe and slippers. America, wait, Georgia called. I got out the door before she caught up with me. Stop for a minute.
What?
We're sorry. We thought you two were in love. We didn't realize we were asking for something he'd be opposed to. We were sure he'd be on board. You don't understand. He's so tired of being bullied and bossed around. You have no idea what he's been through.
I felt the tears rising, and I blinked them away, focusing on the designs on George's jacket.
I know more than you think, she said. Maybe not everything, but a lot. We've been watching this election very closely, and it looks like you two get along so well. He seems so happy around you. And then, we know about how you rescued your maids.
It took me a second to realize what that meant. Who was watching us on their behalf?
And we saw what you did for Marley. We saw you fight, and then your presentation a few days ago.
She stopped to laugh.
That took some guts. We could use a girl with guts.
I shook my head. I wasn't trying to be a hero. Most of the time, I don't feel anything close to brave.
So? It doesn't really matter how you feel about your character. It just matters what you do with it. You, more than the others, act on what's right before thinking about what it will mean for yourself. Maxon has some great candidates up there, but they won't get their hands dirty to make things better. Not like you.
A lot of that was selfish. Marley was important to me, and so were my maids.
She stepped closer. But didn't those actions come with consequences?
Yes.
And you probably knew they would. But you acted for those who couldn't speak up for themselves. That's special, America.
This was different praise from what I was used to. I could handle my dad telling me I was a beautiful singer, or Aspen saying I was the prettiest thing he'd ever seen. But this? It was almost overwhelming.
Honestly, with some of the stuff you've done, I can't believe the king let you stay. The whole thing and the report?
She let out a whistle.
I laughed. He was so angry. I was shocked you made it out alive.
It was by the skin of my teeth, let me tell you. And most days I feel like I'm only seconds away from being kicked out.
But Maxon likes you, right? The way he guards you?
I shrugged. There are days when I feel so sure, and then others where I have no idea. Today isn't a good day. Neither was yesterday, or the day before, if I'm honest.
She nodded. Well, we're pulling for you all the same.
Me and someone else, I corrected.
True.
Again, she gave no clue as to her other favorite.
What was the deal with that curtsy in the woods? Just messing with me? I asked.
She smiled.
I know it might not seem like it by the way we act sometimes, but we really do care about the royal family. If we lose them, the southern rebels will win. If they get true control, well, you heard August.
She shook her head.
Anyway, I'd felt certain I was looking at my future queen, so I figured the least you deserved was a curtsy.
Her reasoning was so silly it made me laugh again.
I can't tell you how nice it is to talk to a girl I'm not competing with.
Getting a bit old? She asked with a sympathetic expression.
As it's gotten smaller, it's gotten worse. I mean, I knew it would, but it feels like it's moving away from trying to be the girl that Maxon would pick to making sure the other girls won't be the one he picks. I don't know if that makes sense.
She nodded.
It does. But hey, this is what you signed up for.
I chuckled.
Actually, I didn't. I was sort of encouraged to put my name in. I didn't want to be a princess.
Really?
Really.